Saint Thomas Aquinas. Dash. Summa Contra Gentiles. Dash. Book 2. Chapter I. Connection of the foregoing with the sequel. I meditated on all thy works, I meditated upon the works of thy hands. It is impossible to know a thing perfectly unless we know its operation, since from the mode and species of its operation we gauge the measure and quality of its power, while the power of a thing shows forth its nature, because a thing has naturally an aptitude for work according as it actually has such and such a nature. Now the operation of a thing is twofold, as the philosopher teaches: one that abides in the very worker and is a perfection of the worker himself, such as to sense, to understand, and to will; and another that passes into an outward thing, and is a perfection of the thing made that results from it, such as to heat, to cut, and to build. Now both of the aforesaid operations are competent to God the former, in that he understands, wills, rejoices, and loves; the latter, in that he brings forth things into being, preserves them, and rules them. Since, however, the former operation is a perfection of the operator, while the latter is a perfection of the thing made, and since the agent is naturally prior to the thing made and is the cause thereof, it follows that the first of the aforesaid operations is the reason of the second, and naturally precedes it, as a cause precedes its effect. This is, in fact, clearly seen in human affairs, for the thought and will of the craftsman is the origin and reason of the work of building. Accordingly, the first of the aforesaid operations, as a simple perfection of the operator, claims for itself the name of operation, or again of action, while the second, as being a perfection of the thing made, takes the name of work. Wherefore those things which a craftsman brings into being by an action of this kind are said to be his handiwork. Of the former operation of God we have already spoken in the foregoing book, where we treated of the divine knowledge and will. In order to complete our treatise of the divine truth, it remains for us to treat of the latter operation, whereby, to wit, things are made and governed by God. We may gather this order from the words quoted above, for first he speaks of meditation on the first kind of operation, when he says, I meditated on all thy operations, so that we refer operation to the divine intelligence and will. Then he refers to meditation on God's works when he says, and I meditated on the works of thy hands, so that by the works of his hands we understand heaven and earth, and all that is brought into being by God, as the handiwork produced by a craftsman. Chapter 2. That the consideration of creatures is useful for building up our faith. Thy's meditation on the divine works is indeed necessary in order to build up man's faith in God. First, because through meditating on his works we are able somewhat to admire and consider the divine wisdom. For things made by art are indications of the art itself, since they are made in likeness to the art. Now God brought things into being by his wisdom, for which reason it is said in the psalm, Thou hast made all things in wisdom. Hence we are able to gather the wisdom of God from the consideration of his works, since by a kind of communication of his likeness it is spread abroad in the things he has made. For it is said, Ecclesiastes 10, he poured her out, namely wisdom, upon all his works. Wherefore the psalmist after you saying, Thy knowledge is become wonderful to me, it is high, and I cannot reach to it, and after referring to the aid of the divine enlightening, when he says, Night shall be my light, etc., confesses himself to have been helped to know the divine wisdom by the consideration of the divine works, saying, Wonderful are thy works, and my soul knoweth right well. Secondly, this consideration leads us to admire the sublime power of God, and consequently begets in men's hearts a reverence for God. For we must needs conclude that the power of the Maker transcends the things made. Wherefore it is said, if they, the philosophers, to wit, admired their power and their effects, namely of the heavens, stars, and elements of the world, let them understand, that he that made them is mightier than they. Also it is written, the invisible things of God, are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, his eternal power also in divinity. And this admiration makes us fear and reverence God. Hence it is said, Great is thy name in might, who shall not fear thee, O King of nations. Thirdly, this consideration inflames the souls of men to the love of the divine goodness. For whatever goodness and perfection is generally apportioned among various creatures, is all united together in him universally, as in the source of all goodness, as we proved in the first book. Wherefore if the goodness, beauty, and sweetness of creatures are so alluring to the minds of men, the fountainhead of the goodness of God himself, in comparison with the rivulets of goodness which we find in creatures, will draw the entranced minds of men wholly to itself. Hence it is said in the psalm, Thou hast given me, O Lord, a delight in thy doings, and in the works of thy hands I shall rejoice. And elsewhere, it is said of the children of men, they shall be inebriated with the plenty of thy house, that is of all creatures, and thou shalt make them drink of the torrent of thy pleasure. For with thee is the fountain of life. Again it is said against certain men by these good things that are seen, namely creatures that are good by participation, they could not understand him that is good, to wit, nay more, that is goodness itself, as we have shown in the first book. Fourthly, this consideration bestows on man a certain likeness to the divine perfection. For it was shown in the first book, that God, by knowing himself, beholds all other things in himself. Since then the Christian faith teaches man chiefly about God, and makes him to know creatures by the light of divine revelation, there results in man a certain likeness to the divine wisdom. Hence it is said, But we all beholding the glory of the Lord with open face, are transformed into the same image. Accordingly it is evident that the consideration of creatures helps to build up the Christian faith. Wherefore it is said, I will remember the works of the Lord, and I will declare the things I have seen by the words of the Lord are his works. Chapter 3. That the knowledge of the nature of creatures avails for refuting errors against God. The consideration of creatures is likewise necessary not only for the building up of faith, but also for the destruction of errors. For errors about creatures sometimes lead one astray from the truth of faith, insofar as they disagree with true knowledge of God. This happens in several ways. First, because through ignorance of the nature of creatures men are sometimes so far misled as to deem that which can but derive its being from something else to be the first cause and God, for they think that nothing exists besides visible creatures. Such were those who thought that any kind of body was God, of whom it is said, who have imagined either the fire, or the wind, or the swift air, or the circle of the stars, or the great water, or the sun and moon to be the gods. Secondly, because they ascribe to certain creatures that which belongs to God alone. This also results from error about creatures, for one does not ascribe to a thing that which is incompatible with its nature, unless one is ignorant of its nature. For instance, if we were to ascribe 3 feet to a man, now that which belongs to God alone is incompatible with the nature of a creature, even as that which belongs to man alone is incompatible with another thing's nature. Hence the foregoing error arises from ignorance of the creature's nature. Against this error it is said, they gave the incommunicable name to stones and wood. Into this error fell those who ascribe the creation of things, or the knowledge of the future, or the working of miracles to causes other than God. Thirdly, because something is withdrawn from the divine power in its working on creatures, through ignorance of the creature's nature. This is evidenced in those who ascribe to things a twofold principle, and in those who aver that things proceed from God, not by the divine will, but by natural necessity, and in those who withdraw either all or some things from divine providence, or who deny that it can work outside the ordinary course of things. For all these are derogatory to the divine power. Against these it is said, who looked upon the Almighty as if he could do nothing, and thou showest thy power, when men will not believe thee to be absolute in power. Fourthly, man, who is led by faith to God as his last end, through ignoring the natures of things, and consequently the order of his place in the universe, thinks himself to be beneath certain creatures above whom he is placed, as evidenced in those who subject man's will to the stars. And against these it is said, be not afraid of the signs of heaven, which the heathens fear. Also in those who deem the angels to be the creators of souls, and human souls to be mortal, and in those who hold any like opinions derogatory to the dignity of man. Accordingly it is clear that the opinion is false of those who asserted that it mattered not to the truth of faith what opinions one holds about creatures, so long as one has right opinion about God, as Augustine relates in his book De Origine Animas. Since error concerning creatures by subjecting the human mind to causes other than God amounts to a false opinion about God, and misleads the minds of men from God, to whom faith strives to lead them. Wherefore Scripture threatens punishment to those who err about creatures, as to unbelievers, in the words of the psalm, because they have not understood the works of the Lord and the operations of his hands, thou shalt destroy them, and shalt not build them up, and these things they thought and were deceived, and further on, they esteemed not the honor of holy souls. Chapter 4. That the philosopher and the theologian treat of creatures in different ways. Now it is evident from what has been said that the teaching of the Christian faith treats of creatures in so far as they reflect a certain likeness of God, and forasmuch as error concerning them leads to error about God, and so they are viewed from a different point by the aforesaid teaching, and by that of human philosophy, for human philosophy considers them as such. Wherefore we find that the different parts of philosophy correspond to the different genera of things. On the other hand, the Christian faith does not consider them as such. For instance, it considers fire not as such, but as representing the sublimity of God, and as being directed to him in any way whatsoever. For as it is stated, full of the glory of the Lord is his work. Hath not the Lord made the saints to declare all his wonderful works? Hence also the philosopher and the believer consider different matters about creatures. For the philosopher considers such things as belong to them by their own nature, for instance that fire tends upwards, whereas the believer considers about creatures only such things as belong to them in respect of their relation to God, for instance that they are created by God, are subject to God, and so forth. Wherefore it argues not imperfection in the teaching of faith, if it overlooks many properties of things such as the shape of the heavens, and the quality of its movement, since neither does the physicist consider the same characters of a line as the geometrician, but only such as are accidental thereto, as the term of a natural body. Any matters, however, that the philosopher and the believer in common consider about creatures, are delivered through different principles on the one hand and on the other. For the philosopher takes his argument from the proper causes of things, whereas the believer has recourse to the first cause, for instance because it has been thus delivered by God, or because it conduces to God's glory, or because God's power is infinite. Hence the teaching of faith should be called the greatest wisdom, since it considers the highest cause, according to the saying of Deuteronomy 4:6, for this is your wisdom and understanding in the sight of nations. Wherefore human philosophy is a handmaid to her as mistress. For this reason sometimes divine wisdom argues from the principles of human philosophy, since also among philosophers the first philosophy makes use of the teachings of all sciences in order to establish its purpose. Hence again both teachings do not follow the same order. For in the teaching of philosophy, which considers creatures in themselves and leads us from them to the knowledge of God, the first consideration is about creatures, and the last of God, whereas in the teaching of faith, which considers creatures only in their relation to God, the consideration about God takes the first place, and that about creatures the last. And thus it is more perfect as being more like God's knowledge, for he beholds other things by knowing himself. Wherefore, according to this order, after what has been said in the first book about God in himself, it remains for us to treat of the things which proceed from him. Chapter 5. Order of the things to be said. We shall treat of these things in the following order. First, we shall discourse of the bringing forth of things into being. Secondly, of their distinction. Thirdly, of the nature of these same things brought forth and distinct from one another, so far as it concerns the truth of faith. Chapter 6. That it becomes God to be the source of being to other things. Taking then as granted the things that were proved in the foregoing book, let us now proceed to prove that it becomes God to be the source and cause of being to other things. For it was shown above, by the proof of Aristotle, that there is a first efficient cause which we call God. Now an efficient cause brings its effects into being. Therefore God is the cause of being to other things. Again, it was shown in the first book, by the argument of the same author, that there is a first immovable mover, which we call God. Now the first mover in any order of movements is the cause of all the movements in that order. Since then many things are brought into being by the movements of the heaven, and since God has been proved to be the first mover in the order of those movements, it follows that God is the cause of being to many things. Moreover, that which belongs to a thing by its nature, must needs be in that thing universally, As for man to be rational, and for fire to tend upwards, now it belongs to a being in act that it should enact an effect, for every agent acts according as it is in act. Therefore it is natural to every being in act to enact something existing in act. Now God is being in act, as we proved in the first book. It is competent to him to produce something in act, to which he is the cause of being. Further, it is a sign of perfection in things of the lower world, that they are able to produce their like, as stated by the philosopher. Now God is supremely perfect, as was proved in the first book. Therefore it is competent to him to produce something in act like unto himself, so that he is the cause of its being. Again, it was shown in the first book, that God wills to communicate his being to other things by way of likeness. Now it belongs to the will's perfection to be the principle of action and movement, as stated in Trida Anima. Since then God's will is perfect, it lacks not the power of communicating his being to a thing by way of likeness, and thus he will be the cause of its being. Further, the more perfect the principle of a thing's action is, to so many more and further distant things can it extend its action. Thus fire, if weak, heats only that which is nigh, but, if strong, heats even distant things. Now pure act, which is God, is more perfect than act mingled with potentiality, as it is with us. But act is the principle of action. Since, then, by the act which is in us we are able to proceed not only to actions that abide in us, such as intelligence and volition, but also to actions that pass on to outward things, and through which certain things are made by us, much more can God, in that he is in act, not only understand and will, but also produce an effect, and thus he can be the cause of being to other things. Hence it is said, who doth great things and unsearchable things without number.